It is an old bromide, an old saying, that if you want to learn a subject, you have to teach it. Sitting in a classroom is not nearly as good as having to tell someone else about it. And when I was told that I had to write about the president's speech in Cairo, I paid closer attention and read the transcript far more carefully than I do with most news events, which, like you, I pay attention to for a while and then forget. But I write for a website that the Washington Post runs called On Faith, and I'm one of the columnists that they have write each week about different questions that they send out. And this week they said, unlike most previous weeks, instead of sending you a question, what we'd like you to do is to listen to the president's speech and then to comment on it. And you can read the comment. I made comments on several parts of the president's speech on the site, but I want to focus today on one. I think, first of all, as a whole, it was a very powerful and important moment. And if you look at it solely from a parochial perspective, that is, did he say exactly what I would have said had I been there, then you're missing the symbolic power of having the American president speak in such a way at such time. What the results of this will be, we don't know. But it was something to see. Having said that, there were certain things, and one in particular, that I dearly wish he had said differently. And this one, I think, escaped a lot of people's notice. In fact, except for some other blogger from The Atlantic magazine who posted my comment, I so far haven't found other people who make this particular point. So I hope that you will be our ambassadors to let the world know. There's one other writer with whom I've been in correspondence in the New Republic who I know is going to write about this. In order to understand the background, though, of what the president got wrong, and he got this very wrong, I'll remind you, if you don't, or inform you if you don't know, of a book that came out in the middle of the last century by the French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. It was called Anti-Semite and Jew. And in that book, he made a very controversial argument which thoughtful Jews rejected. He said that the Jew is defined by the anti-Semite. That if you want to know who a Jew is, you look to see who the anti-Semite hates, because that's how you'll know who a Jew is. Just as in Germany, a Jew was defined by whoever the Nazis said was a Jew. In the world, said Sartre, a Jew is defined by the anti-Semite, not by the Jew. It doesn't matter who you say you are, it matters who those who hate you say you are. Now that is, from the Jewish point of view, a terrible argument, and one that we reject. But it is, in some ways, unwittingly, the argument that the president made in Cairo. Let me read you his words. America's strong bonds with Israel are well known. This bond is unbreakable. It is based on cultural and historical ties. So far, I'm with you. And the recognition that the aspiration for a Jewish homeland is rooted in a tragic history that cannot be denied. Around the world, the Jewish people were persecuted for centuries, and anti-Semitism in Europe culminated in an unprecedented Holocaust. Now, I understand what he was trying to do. He was trying to combat the terrible, pernicious, despicable Holocaust denial that exists in the Arab world. In fact, if you read his remarks the next day in Buchenwald, he did it again. And by the way, whether or not you read his remarks, go online and find the beautiful speech, very short, by the man who I'm proud to say was our centennial scholar, Elie Wiesel, and what he said at Buchenwald. It's unbearably moving and beautiful, and everyone, and certainly every Jew, ought to read it. But in the process of seeking to combat those who deny the Holocaust, let me remind you what the president said, that our aspiration is rooted in a tragic history that cannot be denied. That's not true. The Jewish aspiration for the land of Israel has nothing to do with the persecution that Jews have suffered. We don't belong in Israel because people killed us. We belong in Israel because we have an ancient and enduring claim to the land that goes long before a single Jew was ever killed by an anti-Semite. And as soon as you say, we belong in Israel because we were killed, you feed into that terrible Arab myth, which is, we didn't do anything wrong. Jews were killed in Europe by Christians, and so they foisted all these Jews on us, which wasn't our fault in the first place. Which not only ignores the Arab persecution of Jews over the years and Islamic persecution of Jews over the years, but also ignores the fact that we've been in that land for thousands of years, that it has nothing to do with the Holocaust, that Zionism preceded, even modern Zionism preceded the Holocaust. The first Zionist Congress was in the late 1800s, 70 years before the Holocaust. But even were that not true, our claim to the land goes much farther back than any persecution of Jews. This is what the historian Salo Baron, the great historian who wrote a social and religious cultural history of the Jewish people, called the lachrymose interpretation of Jewish history. Lachrymose means tearful. He said, some people interpret Jewish history only about the bad things that happened to Jews. And that's why he wrote his history, to show Jewish creativity, Jewish writing and poetry and music and all the things that are the positive content of Jewish culture. You know the story about the two kids in Hebrew school? One of them gets sick one day, and he comes back the next day and he says to his friend, I missed yesterday in Hebrew school. What country did we get kicked out of? Because for too long, that was how we taught Jewish history, right? On Tuesday, we got kicked out of France, and on Thursday, we got kicked out of England, and come back next week so we can get to how they kicked us out of Eastern Europe. And playing into that interpretation of Jewish history is destructive and dangerous. Yes, there were terrible, unthinkable, unprecedented persecutions of Jews throughout history. Yes, the Holocaust woke the world up to the realization that we had to be given back our ancient homeland. But our claim to Israel wasn't based on the Second World War. It wasn't Hitler who gave us the title to the land of Israel. It was Abraham. It was Moses. It was Solomon. It was David. It wasn't Stalin, and it wasn't Hitler, and it wasn't Torquemada. It wasn't the people who hated us and killed us. It was the people who taught us and formed us. They're the ones who gave us the title to the land. And when the president gets up and says, it's our tragic history, even though I know that he was seeking to do us good, he does us ill. So that point is indispensable for us to understand, because otherwise we play into a myth that is very powerful now in the Middle East. You may know that there is a denial of Jewish history, not only a denial of the Holocaust, that goes on among the Arabs and the Palestinians in particular, who claim that the Temple of Solomon never existed, that Jews didn't live in the land. There were even people who said that the House of David never existed, right? Which was a good argument until they found an inscription with Beit David on it, right? House of David. So we have to be aware that the denial of our own history is dangerous to our present. How we got to Israel, I grant you, as we know, anybody who comes to Sinai Temple, that's a controversial issue. But there are two schools of thought about this issue. One is that Jews were entirely formed outside of Israel, as in Egypt, and then brought to Israel. But you know what the other school argues? The other school argues, no, they were somehow indigenously formed in Israel. So it doesn't matter which side of that debate you take. Either way, we go back in Israel thousands of years. And the claim that we don't, or the claim that our title to the land is based on our suffering, that takes away the fundamental truth, the rock on which Judaism is based. Now, as I said, I think that this was a powerful moment, and it could have good effects, even though, as with many of you, the president's speech is not as I would have written it. There are many things I would have changed, but you know what? Ultimately, they won't matter. The struggle over the nuances of the speech, the misrepresentations of the speech, the unhappiness on both sides, on all sides, not only two sides, that the president didn't say what he ought to have said, that will matter less than what happens in the weeks and months and years to come. I'm not saying this for the president's sake, but for our sake, because we have to know who we are, and we have to understand what the land of Israel means to us. And we have to be careful not to teach our children that we're there because we suffered. Quite the opposite. We're there because we built ancient kingdoms there. We're there because we built our temple there. We're there because for thousands of years, despite the suffering, not because of the suffering, but despite the suffering, we prayed L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. We prayed it in good times and in bad times. And it had nothing to do with our pain and everything to do with our promise. This week's parsha is called Naso. And Naso has an interesting double meaning. Naso means to lift up, but Naso also means a burden to carry. And every gift is both. It is elevating and debilitating. It's heavy and it's wonderful. We carry the elevating and debilitating burden of Jewish history. There is much in it, as everyone knows, that is painful. I tell you to read Elie Wiesel's remarks. They're moving, but they're painful. He talks there about lying in a bunker and hearing his father call his name and being too scared to go to his father, who then dies. It's painful. It's part of Jewish history. It's part of the sufferings of an individual that have been replicated millions and millions of times. But it is also elevating. It is also the history of the Bible, of the prophets, of the poets, of the sages. And we dare not lose the elevating part of the history in the painful part. So remember, when you go to Israel, we don't only visit the sites of destruction and of pain. We also visit the universities, and we visit the streets named for people like Yehuda Halevi and Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, the great poets of our people, and Bialik and Chernyakhovsky. And we remember that Israel is not about what we lost, but about what we created. And that Yom HaZikaron comes before Yom HaAtzma'ut, but we end with Yom HaAtzma'ut. This is the lesson of the Passover Seder. Matchil b'genut u'misayim b'shevach. We start by remembering the pain, but we end up by remembering the promise. That is a message that I wish the president had delivered to the world, but But you know what? For all of his many skills, the president is not a Jewish historian or a keeper of Jewish memory. We are. So let us, gently and with respect, correct him and announce to the world that we are there not because we suffered, but because we triumphed. Shabbat Shalom.